So how are we doing? Good. Some of you came to me after the last session and said, well, how does all that stuff apply to my life? You know, that's another message, all right? But the thing I want to encourage you is take the truths that were there and begin to kind of just walk them through in your life. Here's one of the things I was chatting with a couple of folks on earlier is always remember, if something just comes bursting out of you to lay condemnation on someone, it's probably not the Lord. But if you've worked it through in your own heart that whatever the issue is, there is a compelling love that so wants to see God bless their lives. That's another story. See, so a lot of it comes down to our own hearts, doesn't it? Okay? So I want to switch gears, and I want to tell you, as I said earlier, one of my very favorite stories, and I hope it will become one of yours. It's a story that every time I'm done telling it, people always say to me, why have I never heard this? All right? By the way, this is one of the paintings from my wife just finished. You can't see it real well because of the light, but it's all done with coffee. And so the browns and the shadings and all that kind of thing. This is a tobacco barn in Tennessee that a hunter friend of mine was sitting in his deer stand and took. And so Cheryl said, can I try to paint that? So if you see it in its vividness, it's pretty amazing. But it's all done with shades of brown. So her detail is, like my stick men have issues, so I'm always amazed. All right. So thank you, Catherine. Let's say thank you to Catherine for her PowerPointing today. She's going to apply for a job to be the sound and tech person at a church. Is that right?
In my spare time.
Yeah, in your spare time. So she's going to throw a face up here. Yeah, that's it that I want you to see. So I want you to say this with me. Opu, kaha, ia. Opu, kaha, ia. That's the name of this young man. Opu, kaha, ia. I heard this story when I was 18 years of age, and it has made an impact on my life for many, many years. And I want to share it with you because through this story, I think you're going to see a lot of things. So in 1792, which is about the time here in our country that George Washington was entering into his second term as president, Kentucky became a state that year. In 1792, on the Big Island of Hawaii. And let me just, Catherine, if you just turn to that next slide. Here's the Big Island of Hawaii. Have any of you been? Okay, some of you have been, all right? So here's Kona on the west side, and you have Hilo on the east side. Well, right down here, actually right in this area right here, is where Opu Kaaia was born. His name means split stomach. And so they don't know if that's because he was born out of a cesarean section, or maybe there was a chief's wife that may have died recently of one, and he was named in her honor. We don't really know. But he was born and raised here in the southern part of the island. And this was at a time when King Kamehameha was beginning to consolidate the Hawaiian Islands. And he was coming now after the Big Island to try to put it under one rule. And he came into Opu Kaaia's village and he watched his mom and dad killed in front of him by Kamehameha's warriors. He took his little three-month-old little brother, kind of put him on his back like this and took off, and a warrior saw it and threw a spear and it landed in the little brother's back and killed him and spared Opu Kaaia's life. And in the midst of this, he was raised. Now imagine this, you're now an orphan and you're being raised by the man who killed your family for 2 years. And in the midst of all of this, around the time he was 9 or 10 years of age, they found one of his father's family members who was the kahuna up in Kealakekua Bay, so right in this area here. And a kahuna is a word in Hawaiian that means what probably we would call witch doctor. In Hawaii at the time, it was very dark. They had a system that was called the kapu system, K-A-P-U. And it was to preserve power and to preserve what the Hawaiians call mana. Mana would be kind of the spiritual power. So for example, if you were standing here and Kamehameha walked by you and the sun happened to be shining this way and his shadow unfortunately landed on you, you were immediately killed because you took some of his mana and you must die so that the mana can be returned to him. And so this was the system of rulership of the time. And some of it had good motives. It was to keep the fish preserved and different things, but then it kind of spilled over into these areas that was very dark. At the time in Hawaii, and you still see them there, they had these things called heiaus. And heiaus, imagine a room, it was about this size, maybe about 10 feet high and flat, all built with lava rock. And it's where human sacrificing would happen. And this Opuka'ia, when he found his uncle, who was a kahuna, it was at a heiau here in Kealakekua Bay, and his uncle's job was the human sacrificing job. And so as a 10, 11, 12-year-old, he was beginning to be trained how to be the next kahuna. Orphan boy, being trained how to be the next kahuna. He's learning the chants that they had to give and all these kinds of things. Very dark time. Well, in the midst of this, one day, right here in Kealakekua Bay, a ship from New England came in called the Triumph. Captain Cook had kind of found Hawaii like this. It was called, at that point, the Sandwich Islands, named after Earl of Sandwich. And so it was the Sandwich Islands, and he died there in Kealakekua Bay. And so this is about 20, 30 years later. And so this boat called the Triumph comes in, and little Opuka'ia swims out to the boat, along with another man, young boy named Hopu. And they got on board the ship, and of course the American sailors on board were, you know, intrigued by these young Hawaiian boys and built a little relationship with them. And the captain, Captain Britnell, invited them to come with them. Well, the father, the kahuna father, said, no, this isn't happening. And, you know, who is, again, the uncle of his dad. Finally, they have some convincing, and for the sacrifice of a pig on the altar, they release this young Opuka'ia to go. The shipmen didn't know how to say Opuka'ia, so they named him Henry. So Henry Opuka'ia, he gets on the boat with Hopu, and they go up to the Seal Islands, and where there's some trading of, you know, skins going on, so to speak, and then they go to China, comes back through Hawaii, and then he ends up doing the 18,000-mile trip from Hawaii down South America, and at about 16 years of age, lands in New England. Orphan boy, trained to be the next generation's kahuna. And he lands here in New England, not far from here. And while he was on the ship, he had his first encounter with a Christian. And it was a man by the name of Russell Hubbard, who was a college graduate who, before continuing in his divinity studies, wanted to travel the world. And while they were coming from Hawaii to New England, he began to train Henry in how to understand the English language, and he did that by teaching him things from the scriptures. It was his first introduction to things of the Lord. He lands in New England, and while he's there, at 17 years of age, one day, as the story goes, he was sitting on the steps of what was known as Yale College at the time, and he's weeping. And a man by the name of Edwin Dwight, who was 21 years old, just graduated, was a graduate student, walked up and he said, "What, young man, why are you weeping?" And in his broken English, he said, "Because I have no one to teach me." And he came alongside Henry and began to put him through training, not only in English, but he learned Hebrew, and he learned Greek, and he learned Latin, and now he knew five languages. And in the midst of all of this, he begins to live in the home of Timothy Dwight, who was a distant cousin of Edwin Dwight, and who was the president of Yale. And he begins to learn the things of God, and he gives his life to Jesus. He's literally the first Hawaiian Christian. And so, as a young man, he gives his life to Jesus. He's beginning to grow. He's beginning to have a heart for his own people. A fourth discipler in his life, between Hubbard and Dwight, a fourth man, was a guy by the name of Samuel Mills, who is known for the Haystack Revival Prayer Movement, where they begin to pray for the nations, that people from our country, because see, at this point in the United States of America, nobody had ever gone overseas as a missionary. It was 1812 was the first time this happened, when they sent a small team to India. Henry was in the area when this all happened. And Samuel Mills begins to say to him, what if, and Henry, who is a prayer warrior, he'd be up at night, and I don't have quotes to give you today, but he would be up at night crying out to Jesus on behalf of his countrymen, weeping, God, would you save them? And he became quite a popular guy because here's a Hawaiian guy in the midst of the colonial New England-isms. And you have this brown-skinned man dressed, you know, like the styles of the time. And he ends up, you know, going to a foreign mission school. They begin to take him around, and here's what's happening. And, you know, obviously we don't look at things this way, but at the time the language was this. It's amazing that a savage could find Jesus. It's amazing that a savage could become like how he's becoming, educated. And Henry has this burden, in his words, to bring the gospel to his own countrymen. So he's invited into this foreign mission school, and he's beginning to study. He translates the entire book of Genesis into the Hawaiian language. He's the first one to put into writing the sounds of the Hawaiian language, grammar and spelling, first one. And so now his whole vision is to bring the gospel to the Sandwich Islands, to his own people. And he's burdened by this. He's up, and you read his journal, he's up at night praying and interceding. And him and Hopu, who had also found the Lord, and they called him Thomas. So Henry and Thomas would get together and in their Hawaiian, cry out to God for their people. God, would you send somebody? He's invited to be a part of this foreign mission school with others, and they're preparing to send the first missions team, the second missions team in the history of our nation, and the first missions team ever to go to Hawaii. Now, I want you just to catch the realities of this. In the midst of all this, what they were dealing with, because they had heard the stories from Henry, and they had heard the realities of Kamehameha and the Kahapu system and the human sacrificing. And they were preparing to go. Well, in the midst of this, on February 17th, 1818, he got typhus fever and suddenly dies. It was a shock to New Englanders because he had become this local boy from Hawaii who they saw. It was shocking to people. His funeral was preached the next day by the man by the name of Lyman Beecher, whose daughter was Harriet Beecher Stowe. And Lyman Beecher preaches his sermon. And they bury Henry. And there's a sadness in New England. Well, within 20 months, a man by the name of Edwin Dwight, the guy that had found him weeping, he compiled his journals. He compiled his letters into a little book. And yeah, and he's buried here in Cornwall, Connecticut. And can you go to the next slide? He go to the next one. We'll maybe have to come back. So he prints this little book. And this little book, it's called The Memoirs of Henry. And the way they said it was Obukaya. They couldn't pronounce Opukaya, so they called him Obukaya. It's The Memoirs of Henry Obukaya, 6-inch by 4-inch book. And it spread through New England. 50,000 copies were printed, which was a bestseller of its time. Hundreds of thousands read it. And out of that came 17 people that said, we need to go for him. We need to go. And among them was the Chamberlain family. About 38 years of age he was, and he's a farmer. And here in the New England area, he had 5 children. The oldest was about 13 or 14. The youngest was ready to turn 2 when they left in October of 1819. Imagine that. There were couples. There were 6 other couples on the boat, and all of them were of this kind of sort. They had been in the mission school, and they were like, hey, I feel God's calling me to go to Hawaii to bring the gospel. And the girl would say, I do too. And he'd say, you know, I kind of like you. How about we get married? I'm not kidding you. And they would get married. 6 couples like that. The average age of the people on that ship was 26 years old. It was young adults going on a missions trip. But these young adults encountered lots of things. Yeah, and this is the ship called the Thaddeus that they boarded. It was about 75, 80 feet long, wasn't very big. But they boarded the Thaddeus. And while on board this ship, you know, they're counting the cost in another level as they're on their way. Because remember, all they ever heard was Kamehameha's warriors coming and killing, human sacrifices if you go against. Here's the way I want you to feel it. When I spoke at the first church in Hawaii about 6 weeks ago, I shared this with them. They just celebrated the 195th coming of the missionaries last week. 2000 will mark the 200-year anniversary, so they're getting ready for a big celebration. But here's how I said it to them, because I said, I don't want you as the first church that was planted by these missionaries to lose this thought. But for them, and I'm not comparing the Hawaiian people to ISIS, don't hear that. But what I want you to hear is this. How would you feel if I was your pastor and we were a church and I said, God has spoken to us that we need to send a team to do outreach full-time amongst ISIS? Just catch how that feels right now, because that's how it felt for them. They never expected to see the shores of the United States of America again. They knew that they were going to lose their lives for Jesus. So this book inspired a movement. It was the second missions trip in the history of the United States of America, and they boarded the Thaddeus, and they headed out. Now, let me just call a time out there, okay? Before I go on, I want to give you what's been happening in Hawaii. Because we have a God that doesn't mess with something here without messing with something here. And so here he is, the first Hawaiian Christian who now dies, who goes to heaven. And by the way, he died with a smile on his face. And the missionaries now are on their way. It took them 164 days to go 18,000 miles. Can you imagine the reality checks along the way as one day when Hopu's on the side of the boat cleaning it and he falls into the water right where the sharks are and they have to rescue him. And you can literally go online and type in Thaddeus Journal and they have a journal online of their trip. And so let me tell you what's happening in Hawaii. So what they don't know, because we didn't have email and we didn't have Fox News and CNN and NBC and ABC and CBS, we didn't have that. What they didn't know was in May of the year they were getting prepared to go, King Kamehameha dies. And what they didn't know was that when he died, his son, Kamehameha II, and two of the leading ladies, Hawaiian ladies, Ka'ahumanu and another gal, Kapiolani, and they come together, and one of the things that you couldn't do in the kapu system, men and women could not eat together. The gods would not approve of it. They would not allow it. But when Kamehameha dies, the son and these two queens decide they're going to try it to see what happens. So they eat together and nothing happens. And the whole kapu system, 2 weeks in October of 1819, before they board the ship, unbeknownst to these missionaries, falls apart. And the chief kahuna of the time, his relative had come from Tahiti, where this all come to, his name was Heva Heva. And he declared during that time, a new religion is coming. It will come in a black box in a language we do not understand. He takes the torches to the heiaus and destroys them all. The missionaries, they have no idea this is going on. But God is preparing a way. And you know why? Because Opu Kaha Ia cried out to God in prayer that God would save his countrymen. So the day comes, March 31st, that they go around the tip, you don't need to go back there, Catherine, but the tip of the big island. And they come to an area called, oh, you did go there. You see where it says Kauaihai Bay up at the top there at about 11 o'clock? They land right there. They come around the top there, and they're parked right there, and there's still a huge heiau that's there today. And they see this, they know what it represents. Remember, they know nothing. And now the reality is, here's the view, and they see canoes coming out to them. They pray. They had 164 days to freshly count the cost. Do you know that when you read the history of it, it's amazing, none of the parents were supportive. There were lines being used like this. Don't you understand we have a mission field right where we are? Why would you go reach those savages? Maybe not unlike something that we hear today. Some of the men went to the captain of the ship and captains of the ship of the day who are going to Hawaii and saying, I'm asking you, if there is one of these women who is uncomfortable there, I will pay her way to come back. This is foolish to send women into this kind of thing. Yet they went. Courage. Oh, how we need to see godly courage again today. So they get to Kauai High, and they send the first mate and Hopu, who is, you know, the only Hopu and a man named Samuel Riggles. They were the only two that actually had met Opukaia. Remember, Hopu had left from Kealakekua Bay with him years before, and now, because Henry asked him, if I can't go, you need to go. And he honored that. And then another man was in the Bible college with him. The rest of them, because they read the memoirs, they came. And so Hopu and the first mate, they get in a boat, and they go to shore. Now, you can imagine the 3 hours they said that they were on shore and away from the ship was like, they said, an eternity. Because they didn't know, were they being killed? What was happening? And then when they see them coming back, they can hardly wait. They get on board, and they said, Hopu, now I've told you what's happened already. They found that out. And so Hopu is so excited, he can only get it out in Hawaiian. They're going, no, Thomas, we cannot understand you. And finally, the first mate said this, Kamehameha is dead. The kapu system is gone. The chief kahuna has burned everything. They're open to the gospel. Is that not amazing? Let's kind of go through a few of those slides again and kind of get back to where we were. Keep going. Next one. So this is where they land. This is a snapshot right now today of Kailua Kona, Hawaii. This is the pier. That is there, up in the right-hand corner right there on the grass lawn. That's where Cheryl and I got married. Just a little extra tip there. All right. So right here, this rock, it was just dedicated a few weeks ago on 195th. This is known as the Plymouth Rock of Hawaii. And it's where the missionaries first stepped. They came into the bay here. This is where Kamehameha lived. They came in here. And this rock right here is where they first stepped. And with them, they had a black box. And inside that black box was a Bible that was not in their language. And Heva saw it. And they begin to see it and realize this is what our kahuna, our priest, God even used that to speak to them. And the gospel came. And I don't know how these movies tie in yet. I'm still trying to wind that into the story here. That's okay, Catherine. Don't worry about it. So let's go down to, you're a good sport, Catherine. You're awesome. Okay, so let's go to the next one. So this is the sign. It says the Plymouth Rock of Hawaii. This was just put up 2 weekends ago as a part of the 195th anniversary. It was just put there to mark that rock. And you can see it under here because the pier is over it now. So the gospel comes. And the chiefs, which are called ali'i in Hawaiian, the word is ali'i, and the ali'i and the two queens begin to be responsive to Jesus, and they give their lives to the Lord. Medicine, education. You remember Henry began to translate things, the Bible. And the gospel begins to come to Hawaii, and it's an amazing thing that begins to happen. Let's go to the next slide. This is the first church. It's still there today. This is the church I preached at about 6 weeks ago. It's called Mukuaikawa Church. And you see how it's built. It looks a lot of black and white to you. Well, you see this, all the black is lava rock. And it was taken from a leftover heiau. And they redeemed it and they blended it with coral. And it still looks like that today. And when you go inside, let me show you this picture. This is my very favorite wood. You can't really see it here, but it's called koa wood. It's only grown on the Big Island of Hawaii. And it's got, when you shine it, I have a little case with me that I have a little bookmark that I keep in my Bible that is koa wood, and it's kind of a 3D kind of looking. It's beautiful. So all the pews are, and that was made out of koa wood right from behind where the church is today. And this is Mukuaikawa Church. It's still there. It's still functioning as a live church of Jesus 195 years later. All right. Let me show you the next slide here. So this is, when you go to Mukuaikawa Church, you see this plaque. The first Hawaiian Christian, Henry Opukaha'ia, died at Cornwall, Connecticut, 1818. The first Christian missionaries to Hawaii, Bingham, Thurston, Whitney, landed at Kailua Kailua April 2nd, 1820, with their Hawaiian comrades Hopu, Kanui, and Hanoli'i. And it marks the day. I wonder what happened in heaven that day when Opu Ka'aia saw the dream of his heart fulfilled by God. Well, it doesn't stop there. Chiefess Kapiolani, let me see what the next slide is here. Yeah, Chiefess Kapiolani. This is a picture by a famous Hawaiian artist who has since died. She was upset that some of the ali'i was refusing the gospel of Jesus Christ, so she thought, for once and for all, I'm going to show them that this religion is dead. The Hawaiian goddess, false god, Madam Pele, which is the volcano goddess in the Hawaiian language, was kind of the dominant goddess of the time. So what she did, this brave woman, Chiefess Kapiolani, she walked about 90 miles on lava rock from Kailua Kona down to the mouth of Halemaumau Crater, which is the same place when you're watching on the news today and you see the Kilauea volcano, it's the same one. It's the very same. And she walked, and the priests, the false priests and everybody were just saying, no, you can't do this. Pele will come up and will lick you into the volcano. And she said this. She said, if she does, then you must worship her. But if not, you must worship Jesus. And she stood over just like this with scriptures, and she declared, Jehovah's my God. And God just broke the whole thing wide open. And do you know, within 40 years of that time, the late 50s, early 60s, of the 1800s, 90% of the Hawaiian Islands were Christians. God moved in a nation. Remember, this was not the United States at the time. It was a nation. And God moved mightily. And it all started with the prayers of a young man who began to intercede for his own countrymen. Let's go to the next slide. This is Haile Church. Haile is on the opposite side, on Hilo. And in the 1850s, this was the largest church in the world. Hilo had 1,000 people living in the community, but they had 10,000 people in the church. It was the largest church in the world in the 1850s. Now, I want to remind you, this dramatic display of the wonder of God is on a 92 by 76 mile island. That's the size of it. And you have a God that is work displaying to the world his might and his power and his majesty. And it's coming because a young man cried out for his own country and because people were willing to obey Jesus, encourage, and watch God do a work. In the 1850s, you can turn to the next slide, King Kalakaua, who is the Kamehameha's grandson, declared this statement, Uamau ke'ea oka'aina ikapono. And it's the state motto. If you watch Hawaii 5-0, you see this symbol and this motto right there on it. And here's what it means. The life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness. That's still the state motto of Hawaii today. Because righteousness, they literally changed the Constitution so that it was reflecting the character of God and what the Scripture says. God did a work. It was an amazing work that he did. It's a work that we need to see and experience in our own lives to realize he can do that again. When I'm in Hawaii, my Hawaiian friends, there's a phrase they use in Hawaiian, like, do it again, or like if we were at a concert and they went away and you want an encore, the phrase is hana ho. And so they're praying, Lord, hana ho, do it again. Not just in Hawaii, but now as a part of the United States, do it in our nation. So they're praying, Lord, hana ho. Because they've experienced it. They know what God has done. Let's go to the next slide. So you see the pier right there in the middle. So let me just tell you what kind of God we serve. He's a God of now and then. He's a God of now, and he honors faithfulness of my life and yours then. And in this case, of Opu Ka'aia's. You see, right? If you go, the first little, there's the bay there, and you go to that other bay, and right up behind that bay, there's some buildings back there. Right there is something that is called the University of the Nations. It's Youth with a Mission, which is the largest missions organization in the world. For whatever reason, Jesus led them to start the largest missions base hub in the world right there, right by where the Thaddeus came in. It's there right now. I could stand in the water in the bay there where the Thaddeus came in and probably about 15 football throws, you know, one upon another, and I would be up at that YMCA. That's where Cheryl and I met, got married, where we were trained. And then we got married there behind the Kona Inn restaurant on the lawn there. This story got in me. And I want to tell you, 2020, they're celebrating the 200-year anniversary of God bringing the missionaries. That YWAM base is there because a young Hawaiian boy cried out for his countrymen. And God moved. God breathed life on a little book that's full of his writings that the Holy Spirit breathed on, and people said, I must go for him. Let's look at the next slide. This is a picture of the University of the Nations. You can see the different flags, depending on what nations are represented there at any time. They have the flags up, and this is where they send people out to go all the way around the world. If you're standing right here, you can look down and see the bay where the Thaddeus came in. Let's go to the next slide. So when Cheryl and I were, we took a six-week break, and we spent time in Kona in August of 2013. And while we were there, one of my pastor friends who pastors Makuaikawa, we were having breakfast, and he said, hey, you should come to the Opukaia thing this Saturday. And I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? Because he knew of my journey with Henry. I said, what are you talking about? I said, well, don't you know? I said, don't I know what? And he said, don't you know that 20 years ago they brought his bones back? I said, no, what are you talking about? So when I was there in February, I met his living relative. Her name is Deborah Lee. And Deborah told me the story. I'd read it, but she had told me the story. And so here I am at this event. And at this event where they're celebrating the 20-year coming back of Henry, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute, sits Lauren Cunningham, the founder of Youth with a Mission. And I took this picture of the man who started it all and the man who's leading it now. An amazing moment to watch and see. And this is one of the leading disciple makers in my life who poured into my life. So let me show you the next picture. So here is where Henry is buried. You see the bay back there? That's where he swam out. So they came in 1993, and Deborah had this on his heart. When you read in Henry's journal, here's his last words. Oh, as he's on his deathbed. Oh, how I long to see Hawaii. But I think I never shall. God knows what's best. And Deborah decided we need to bring back his iwi, which is the Hawaiian word for bones. And they flew to Connecticut and over time built a relationship. And in August of 1993, United Airlines flew his bones back in a beautiful koa wood casket to Hawaii. And when they opened the casket up in Connecticut, Deborah said it was amazing, Dave, because the men who opened it up didn't know his story, but they said, look at his skeletal structure. He had a smile on his face when he died. And they literally had a coffin this big because they thought he would just be ashes. And he wasn't. Because of the way they layered the ground, his whole skeletal. So they had to rebuild a casket and send it. And they took him to the various leading churches of the day that were founded at that time and celebrated this story of Opukaia. And then they brought him via canoe. They paddled him on a double rigger canoe. So they had the canoe club here, you know, with two canoes and this bridge here. And they put his casket on there. And they came in, and one of his relatives swam out from Kalakaua Bay to welcome him back. And they buried him right here in view of Kalakaua Bay. It's an amazing story of the work of God. It's a story of what God can do in a nation if people pray and if people have the courage to obey, that God can move mightily. I want to share two things with you. One of the desires I've had for many years in my life, but just never, I mean, it's one of those things, it'd be cool, but just literally never thought it would happen. I always wanted to own one of the original 50,000 copies of that memoirs. Last November when I was online, I found it and I bought it and it's here today. And as you go out, you'll see right in the middle there, that stand, Sonia will uncover that in a minute, is one of the original 50,000 copies. We're having it restored. It's not, I don't want you to hold it because there's a thread holding the cover together, but I have a man who's going to be restoring it for me, so he said David can live another 200 years. But it's one of the original 50,000 copies of those memoirs. So as I hold it, I wonder, was it one of the missionaries that read this copy? Who was it? And so I've told my Hawaiian friends, Cheryl and I feel like we're to steward this, and we're getting it restored so that at the 200th anniversary, they can have it in Hawaii and tell the story afresh. Because there's young Hawaiian boys that need to hear this story again. And there's young Hawaiian women that need to rise to the place that God's called them to be. So I want you to see that on your way out. And secondly, Cheryl and I have felt led by the Lord. We've really prayed this through, and we're going to do it at least once, but we may do it over the next several years, is we feel like we're to do a trip to Hawaii and invite some friends to go with us to let them experience this firsthand. So next February, and there's a handout on the registration table there if you're interested in this. Next February, 12th to the 21st, it's going to be a 10-day trip, one day over, one day back. The first 4 days, we're going to take you to these places. We're going to take you to Kealakekua Bay, where you can see where Henry swam out, and right there is the heiau where he was being trained to be the kahuna. We're going to take you the next day to Mukuaikawa Church. It's Valentine's Day, and it's a Sunday. We're going to take you to Mukuaikawa Church, and we're going to tell you the story. We're going to take you to Hawaii's Plymouth Rock. We want to show you the place where the kapu system was broken as men and women ate together. And that night, we're going to have with Island Breeze, which are my luau friends, we're going to have a luau that night that is going to be one awesome luau. Then on Monday, we're going to drive down to the volcano so that you can see where Kapi'olani walked and where she stood to declare the truth of God. And on Tuesday, we're going to take you to Hilo so you can go to Haile Church, a church that was the largest church in the world that inspired what was known as the Great Awakening. One day in that church, 1,705 people were baptized on one day. And I want to take people there because I want you... I don't know very many people that can say, I've been in a place where the Spirit of God has moved and changed the nation. And I believe if we want to have hope, if we want to have courage, and we want to have vision of what God can do in our land, I want to take you and let you experience this. And then the last 4 days are just play days. And there are tons of things to do on the Big Island of Hawaii just to go play. So we're inviting some people who would say, I want to do that. I want to experience that. We're going to limit it to 40 to 50 people, so I just want it on one bus so we can all do this thing together. But I wanted to share this story with you today because I want you to realize if God can take an orphan boy who's being trained to be a pagan human sacrificing priest and can turn him into a young man that cries out in the middle of the night for a move of God. You see, it's time that we stand with God and we cry out on what's going on in God's heart. Because the Bible says he wants all men to be saved. But how will they know, Romans says, unless we bring and communicate and teach and speak the gospel to them? And so I want to create an environment where people can experience that afresh. And I'm creating a little journal that will go with this. So in each place, you'll have information, but it's a place where you can say yes. I want to stand there in Kealakekua Bay, and I want to challenge people, and I want to say to them, so this guy took a risk. He was an orphan. 14, 15 years of age, he had no idea where this ship was going. What risks is God asking you to take? I want you to stand at Halemaumau Volcano. I want you to say, as a woman, just like this woman who took a stand and who moved, who was fearless, where is God challenging you to lay down your fears and become fearless? So if you're interested in that, you're welcome to pick up one of those and let me know. Let me just throw this. I think I got one more slide. So here's a picture of the little book. And again, you can see it live in the back there. So, as I told you, this is a very moving, meaningful story in my life. And I just wanted to share it with you because I want you to see what our God can do. He is not small. He is large. And he can change nations. And he can do it through little, needy, orphan boys and girls. Through people who were willing to serve another God and who turned to Jesus. And now God is using them powerfully. He can do that through you and me. Amen? So Jesus, we give you thanks. Thank you that you highlight stories for us. And this little story that's been so tucked away that many do not know, I thank you that you are reviving this story as a means for us to recognize not only you are a God of now, but you're also a God of then. You move now amongst Henry and those missionaries, but here you are 200 years later on that same rock, sending missionaries around the world. You are an absolutely amazing God. Lord, never let us forget how big you are and that you are a God that when we submit ourselves to you and we walk full of grace and truth and love and holiness according to your word We're obedient to speak when you ask us to speak. We're obedient to love when you ask us to express love, that you can change a nation. So Lord, today we're asking you for the United States, Lord Hanaho. Do it again. And do it again, Lord, through our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you so much for letting me be with you today.